Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for January 13th, 2009. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. In this episode, we'll be discussing a paper published in the December 23rd issue of Science Signaling about the role of anchoring proteins in the cellular response to hypoxia. The work we'll be talking about was performed by Wei Wong in the laboratory of John Scott at the Oregon Health and Science University. I spoke with both Dr. Wong and Dr. Scott about their work. Hello, Dr. Scott.
Hi, how are you, Annalisa?
I'm well.
Good.
So your lab focuses on anchoring proteins. What are anchoring proteins and what purpose do they serve in the cell?
So anchoring proteins are a growing class of what I would describe as signal organizing molecules. And the anchoring proteins that we study, that we identified principally, were identified on the basis of their ability to target the cyclic AMP-dependent protein kinase to unique regions within the cell. And their principal role, it was believed, or it is believed, is to provide an element of selectivity in the cyclic AMP response, because obviously generation of cyclic AMP has many different physiological effects, but they have to be directed within the cell. And so the idea is that the anchoring proteins facilitate this process by targeting the cyclic AMP-dependent protein kinase and other cyclic AMP effector molecules at unique regions within the cell. But what I think has become clear to us over the last few years and other people in the field is that these anchoring proteins actually fulfill a broader function and are involved in other cellular processes that are just as important as phosphorylation, dephosphorylation. And I think that that's what makes this current study particularly interesting, because it provides some fairly novel and, I think, compelling evidence for a role for one of these anchoring proteins in oxygen dependent signaling events and the regulation of oxygen homeostasis.
So the paper you've just published in Science Signaling is about how some of these anchoring proteins are involved in the response to limited oxygen or hypoxia. How does hypoxia affect cells?
So oxygen regulation is a fundamentally important thing for cell life. And oxygen levels are maintained within a very narrow range because the principal role of oxygen in the cell is oxidative phosphorylation and the production of ATP. And this occurs predominantly, or occurs at the mitochondria, and it's a mitochondrial event. Now, there are other roles for oxygen within the cell because clearly you need to have oxygen-dependent regulation to be able to facilitate the vascularization of various different tissues. And so clearly, providing oxygen to cells is very, very important.
How do cells sense oxygen levels?
Well, oxygen levels are maintained within a very, very narrow range. And too much oxygen has a deleterious effect. And clearly, too little oxygen has a very catastrophic effect on the cell because you're not able to produce ATP, among other things. And to this end, cells have evolved a hypoxia-inducible transcription factor pathway, or the HIF-1-alpha pathway, that in response to acute changes in oxygen, this transcription factor is able to transcribe genes that are important for cell survival. And some very elegant work that's been done over a number of years by many different groups has focused on trying to understand how the HIF pathway is exquisitely regulated. And it has to be regulated extremely tightly, because if you have a sudden drop in oxygen, you want to be able to turn this pathway on. And the way that it is regulated is a combination of covalent modifications and ubiquitin-mediated proteolysis.
So does your paper then describe a link between the oxygen sensing system and these scaffolding proteins?
Yes, it does. And I think that that's one of the really key findings in the work. And the sort of rationale behind that was that we realized that when you look at the HIF signaling pathway, it's very tightly regulated and it involves coordinating numerous enzyme activities. And this is precisely what some of the anchoring proteins do, in that they bring together different enzymes at different times and different places in the cell. So with that in mind, Wei Wong, one of the postdocs in the lab, realized that it was possible that some of our ACAPs may in fact interface with the HIF pathway.
And then I spoke with Wei Wong about the experiments. Welcome, Dr. Wong.
Thank you.
You did some experiments that addressed the role of MACAP, a specific scaffolding protein, in regulating the activity of HIF-1-alpha. What did you find?
So we found that MACAP, which is a muscle ACAP, interacts with HIF-1-alpha and its regulatory proteins. First, we performed co-immunoprecipitations from heart cells and cell lines that are derived from heart cells. And we found that MACAP interacted with HIF-1-alpha, two of the prolyl hydroxylases, that is PHD2 and 3, a protein called the von Hippel-Lindau protein, or PVHL, and a ubiquitin ligase called CO2.
So your experiments then essentially showed that HIF-1-alpha associates with the enzymes that regulate its activity in a complex that's mediated by the scaffolding protein?
That's right. We also confirmed these interactions by performing co-immunoprecipitations from transfected cells, which allowed us to include additional negative controls, such as another transcription factor in the case of HIF-1-alpha, or different PHD isoforms in the case of PHD2 and 3. In all of these cases, we found that MACAP interacts with HIF-1-alpha, PHD2 and 3, PVHL, and SIA2.
So all of these proteins seem to associate together in a complex. Where in the cell is this complex located?
The MACAP complex is located at the perinuclear membrane, which is also known as the nuclear envelope.
What happens when you disrupt the complex?
When this complex is disrupted in cardiomyocytes, less HIF-1-alpha protein translocates to the nucleus in response to hypoxia, and the transcription of two HIF-1-alpha target genes, GLUT1 and VEGF, are reduced during hypoxia. GLUT1 is a glucose transporter, and VEGF is the vascular endothelial growth factor. We used three different methods to disrupt this complex. The first method involved complete removal of the scaffolding protein with RNA interference. But we also wanted to know what would happen if MACAP was still present, but not in its normal perinuclear localization. To do this, we overexpressed one of the domains of MACAP that binds to a transmembrane protein called nesprin. This interaction is crucial for localizing MACAP to the perinuclear membrane. So by overexpressing this domain of MACAP that binds to nesprin, we have previously shown that this displaces MACAP from its normal location. However, displacing the entire MACAP pool from the perinuclear membrane would also disrupt other signaling pathways that are associated with MACAP. So our final method involved just displacing the HIF-1-alpha complex, which we showed in the paper binds to the amino terminus of MACAP. All of these methods produced the same result in that less HIF-1-alpha protein translocated to the nucleus, and there was less transcription of HIF-1-alpha target genes during hypoxia. There's less protein being stabilized and translocating to the nucleus. So what we're proposing is that there's a small pool of HIF-1-alpha and its regulatory enzymes that are associated with MACAP. It's certainly not the entire pool of HIF-1-alpha in the cell.
I think the important point is that with this complex being at the perinuclear membrane, it means that the sequestered pool of the transcription factor is optimally positioned for rapid translocation into the nucleus. So when you take out the anchoring protein or you disrupt or you move the complex to a different part of the cell, it takes longer for these events to occur, and that's why the transcriptional response is reduced. And again, it's all to do more with time rather than space here. This is a process that has to happen really quickly.
So when you prevent HIF-1-alpha from binding to MACAP and essentially taking it out of that complex at the nuclear envelope, then you prevent HIF-1-alpha from accumulating in the nucleus.
That's right. And we showed this with three different methods, with the removing the anchoring protein, displacing MACAP from the perinuclear envelope, and displacing HIF-1-alpha itself from the MACAP complex.
So your experiments show that preventing HIF-1-alpha from binding to the complex impedes its ability to translocate to the nucleus and therefore impedes the cell's ability to respond to hypoxia. So presumably then, normally, HIF-1-alpha interacts with the scaffolding and that somehow aids the nuclear translocation of HIF-1-alpha during the hypoxic response. Is that the idea?
Right. So we think that because MACAP is located so close to the site of action for HIF-1 alpha, which is the nucleus, that this helps increase the HIF-1 alpha response during hypoxia.
Dr. Scott, how does bringing all of these components together in one place improve the cell's ability to respond to hypoxia?
Well, I think there are probably at least two important factors that contribute to, you know, the sort of facilitation of the hypoxic response. First of all, bringing together these molecules in the same microenvironment increases the efficiency of the transduction of signals from one molecule to the next. And that's precisely what anchoring proteins, scaffolding proteins do. So I think that this is probably the first example that I know of a scaffolding protein that functions in an important physiological response, such as the hypoxic response. And it's particularly relevant for the temporal regulation because, as we've sort of stressed through this interview, it's the speed of the hypoxic response that's important for survival. So having an anchoring protein such as MACAP allows that response to proceed efficiently and rapidly. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see whether or not there are other examples of similar scaffolding complexes in other cells for HIF-1 alpha, such as neurons, because all of this work was done in heart cells. But that will be something that will be interesting to do. The second important point is a broader context, and that is the idea that some of the ubiquitin machinery may be brought together in multi-protein complexes. Now, it's been known for some time that the E3 ligases form large complexes, but here we have an example where we have the E3 ligases and some of the oxygen-sensing enzymes that are brought into a multi-protein complex. And that in itself is a novel and interesting finding that, as I begin to talk to other people, is an attractive mechanism to, again, enhance this hypoxic response, or just in general, to enhance ubiquitin-mediated signaling events. So I think that we're very excited to follow up on these findings to see if some of the other anchoring proteins that we've worked on and discovered fulfill analogous functions in different cell types.
Thank you for talking with me today, Dr. Scott.
You're very welcome.
The paper we discussed is titled MACAP Compartmentalizes Oxygen-Dependent Control of HIF-1 Alpha and published in the December 23rd issue of Science Signaling. If you'd like to learn more about HIFs, check out the Science Signaling Archives, where you can find a perspective by Joseph Garcia about hypoxia-inducible factors in tumor cell biology and a review by Wenger and colleagues about hypoxia response elements, the binding sites in DNA where the HIFs act. That wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, the Science Society. Our producer is Robert Frederick. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for joining us.